Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. Now here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
Today we'll discuss budget concerns and contract negotiations at the Social Security Administration with AFGE SSA Council 220 President Witold Skierczynski, the story behind explosives found at a Detroit federal building with AFGE Federal Protective Service Local 918 President David Wright, and Grantham University's 60th anniversary with Grantham President Dr. Frederick Snow. Witold, welcome to the program. Now, AFGE's SSA workers from 96 offices in 31 states across the country had a one-day informational picket in March to educate the public about the impact of House Fiscal Year 2011 budget. Tell us about that.
Yes, we have been receiving a lot of concern from federal employees about potential furloughs. The House passed budget for fiscal year 11 would cut $1.7 billion from the president's appropriations request for Social Security administrative expenses. And the commissioner of Social Security has indicated to Congress that such a cut would result in furloughs of a month for Social Security employees. So employees around the country were upset about that legislative action by the House. So on March 2nd, we asked workers to show their disapproval by doing some informational picketing. And we did do it in 96 different locations throughout the country, from Maine to California. Folks were, and from Washington to Florida, in a variety of offices. Folks did informational picketing. Some of our facilities are large, like in headquarters. We had a big rally. 10,000 people work in the Baltimore headquarters facilities. And we had pickets as small as one person in an office, small office in Minnesota. So the sizes of the rallies varied, and there certainly was a lot of Social Security employees, thousands of them, literally, who went out during their lunch periods. This is unpaid time. They donated their lunches and expressed their concern out in front of their offices. And the members of the public who were visiting those offices on that particular day were given some information about the House action and the impact it would have on the employees and also on the public. The employees were not protesting so much about the fact that furloughs would affect their pocketbooks, but they focused their attention on the impact that would have on the public. If we had furloughs of up to 30 days for a month, we figure that's between 20 and 23 work days, that the offices would either be closed or would have limited staff. And in either case, folks would have difficulty having their Social Security business done, whether they did it by phone or they did it face-to-face. Even Internet services would be limited because all Internet claims are reviewed by an actual employee. And if the office is closed, there would be no one to review it. And if we have short staff, there would be delays in terms of dealing with that work.
So cutting $1.7 billion from the Social Security Administration's administrative expenses would have a far-reaching impact, correct?
Certainly would. There's estimates that the House Ways and Means Committee have already made about how that would affect our work. Up to 300,000 people in this fiscal year who filed disability benefits would have their application significantly delayed. Up to 400,000 people nationwide would have their retirement survivors and Medicare applications significantly delayed. And we would You would have a lot more trouble. It's hard to estimate how many people would not get through on our 800 number, but certainly if we had people furloughed and on and short staff in our 800 number operation, less people would get it through. And folks who would visit our offices would have significantly increased waiting times in order to get any service.
When you're out there doing the rallies, what kind of response are you getting from people when you bring up these issues of potential furloughs and massive cuts to the agency?
Well, the folks that our employees are talking to, who are customers of the Social Security Administration, are quite upset that if they're coming in for a claim and there may be a furlough in a short period of time, they're concerned about what's going to happen to their claim. And they should be. Their claim's going to get delayed. I mean, we have certain areas in our work that have had significant improvements in the last couple years. And one particular area is on disability appeals. Folks who file for disability benefits, when they're denied, they're entitled to file appeals. And one of the appeals is to have a hearing before an administrative law judge. Now, back in 3 years ago, our processing time was running over 500 days from the point that you filed for a hearing to the point where you got a decision. And that processing time, due to increases in staff since then, has been reduced to about 380-some days. So we've had a significant reduction in the processing time. Still too long, but certainly shorter than it was before. Now, that was only done by an infusion of staff, hiring of more administrative law judges, hiring of more support staff to write the decisions that the judges make. And if right now what the administration has done, because of we're running on a continuing resolution for fiscal year 10 funding is what we're running on. And because in order to get the continuing resolution, the last 3 week extension, Congress cut $200 million from SSA's budget. They've taken a number of actions to reduce service. There's been a hiring freeze, so that anyone who leaves isn't replaced, which means staffing is going down. And if the hiring freeze stays in for the whole fiscal year, you're talking about 2,500 less employees at Social Security who can service the public. If there's also a overtime freeze, now the public may not have a lot of sympathy for that, but frankly, in our public contact facilities, most of the work on an eight-hour day is done interviewing the public. Processing those claims takes time and is often done on overtime. Without overtime, we lose the ability to process timely the claims that we're taking all day from the public who, either through telephone interviews or face-to-face interviews. So that's a serious concern. The commissioner has decided to close 300 contact stations. Now, that's 300 places, most of them in rural and remote areas of the country, where Social Security employees go periodically, once a week in some cases, once every 2 weeks in some places, once a month in other places, to provide face-to-face service for folks who live in these communities. By closing these contact stations, you're basically eliminating such face-to-face service. We have, for instance, two contact stations that closed in the Northern Marianas Islands. Those folks have no possibility of any face-to-face service anymore. We've had five contact stations close in Alaska and remote places like Nome and Barrow, where we send an employee of Social Security there periodically to take care of the business, Social Security business, of the people who work in those communities. They no longer have that available to them. In many of those remote places, the telephone service is spotty and internet service doesn't exist. So they have extreme difficulties now communicating with Social Security on their business because of these closures, which are a result of these spending cuts. And the commissioner is also terminated the yearly statement that everyone gets. An announcement, in fact, was made yesterday that we are no longer going to be mailing the wage and benefit statements that are sent to every wage earner in our country, which allows them to check the accuracy of their record to see that we're actually crediting them with their proper earnings on their record, and also gives them an estimate of what they would get if they would retire, so that they can plan for the future on you know, what they need to do to be secure in their retirement. So there's already significant impacts of staying on this continuing resolution spending, and this $200 million cut that was just enacted to get a three-week extension of the continuing resolution.
Witold Skierczynski, president of AFGE's National Council of SSA Field Operations Locals. Witold, how do you lead the charge going forward?
Well, we're planning the current continuing resolution expires in 9 days, and we're planning a series of further informational picketing events a week from today at our offices. In addition, the AFL-CIO is planning some events on Monday in connection with the anniversary of the Martin Luther King assassination. These events have to do with the plight of public employees, which would include the well-documented struggles that are happening in many states by public employees to maintain their collective bargaining rights, and also the effect on federal services by the extreme cuts that have been proposed by the House in their FY11 spending legislation that passed the House. So there's a couple of things happening next week. On Wednesday, we're in process of finding, encouraging our employees and finding out how many in how many offices we're going to have events. But folks, you know, federal employees, and this is not only true in Social Security but other agencies. For some reason, government agencies are being very circumspect in providing information to federal employees and what's going to happen to them if there is a government shutdown. In the past, government shutdowns, some employees have been declared essential. They've worked, and they although they weren't getting paid while there was a government shutdown, since there was no appropriate funds to pay them, they would get paid, you know, once a budget was passed. Now agencies, including Social Security, are refusing to provide us information on what they're going to do. So, you know, we have no idea as a union, nor do the employees have any idea. If Congress doesn't pass a continuing resolution or a budget for FY11 by next week, what's going to happen after that? Whether the offices are going to be open, whether some employees are going to be declared essential, whether we'd be taking claims, whether the 800 number is going to be operating, all of that's an unknown, and it's a problem. So our folks are not only concerned about, you know, the impact that furloughs are going to have on their day-to-day lives, whether they're going to be working or not, whether they're getting paid, but also the effect it's going to have on the folks that we service. So we're going to have events next week, and hopefully we'll have the impact will be that the public and Congress will wake up and come to a conclusion that, you know, even if we want to balance the budget as much as possible and to review the kinds of government services that we provide, that when we do decide that a particular government service is necessary, such as Social Security, that we spend enough money and budget enough money so that the people are entitled to collect their Social Security benefits, for which they've been paying taxes for their entire working life, that there are a sufficient number of workers to process their applications and to ensure that they get paid timely so that they can have secure income security in their retirement or if they're disabled. And that's the really the point, that we have to decide if we're going to maintain government services, those services should be efficient and should be funded properly so that the public can get what they paid for.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue with Witold Skierczynski and learn about SSA contract negotiations.
Looking for a new computer, TV, or home appliance? Purchasing Power has a hassle-free way for you to buy these items through easy payroll deduction. You can get the new Dell Inspiron 15-inch laptop for just $30 bi-weekly. Get started today. Log on to shoppurchasingpower.com. That's shoppurchasingpower.com. AFGE members are eligible for a 10% members-only discount for a limited time. Sales tax may apply.
Attention AFGE members. AFGE has formed an exclusive partnership with Grantham University to offer you and your family members a special discounted tuition rate. With Grantham University's 100% online degree programs, it's even easier to earn a college degree while working full-time and meeting the needs of your family. Military and government training may be eligible for transfer credit. Find out more at grantham.edu/AFGE. That's grantham.edu/AFGE.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and I'm joined by Witold Skierczynski, president of AFGE's National Council of SSA Field Operations Locals. Witold, the SSA Council is currently in contract negotiations with management. Give us an update on those negotiations.
Well, we're in negotiations with my colleagues in other councils. In SSA, we have four councils and two large locals that comprise what we call a general committee, and that's the bargaining unit. And our contract's up, and we've been at the table since January of last year. In contract negotiations on a variety of issues, and I left the table as I was presenting some new proposals we had to the agency in order to be on your show. But the negotiations are going slowly, and in my opinion, we're getting closer and closer to an impasse. There's a wide variety of issues that we have on the table. In the federal sector, you know, we're prohibited from bargaining pay and benefits that's set by Congress, but we can bargain working conditions and various conditions of employment. So, we're negotiating a number of articles in the contract that affect various aspects of the employee's work life, such as their performance appraisal system, the merit promotion system that's used to determine who gets promoted to internal agency vacancies, the award system, how the agency, what amount of money the agency allocates for awards, what process they use to award people based on their performance or based on what they do on special projects. We're negotiating employee rights, the kind of rights that employees have, rights to information that the agency is maintaining on them, rights that they have to have a union representation if the agency is having a disciplinary type meeting with them, rights, that they have to file various appeals. We have, articles on the agency grievance procedure, how ultimately grievances are settled through arbitration, how the arbitration process operates. So equal employment opportunity, the whole EEO system, plans that the agency will have in place to ensure that there's diversity in the workplace and that there won't be any discrimination, and if there is alleged discrimination, the types of processes that will exist for employees to assert their rights to question agency officials' actions that they perceive as discriminatory. We have articles on the training that's offered by the agency, articles proposed on details, if the agency needs to move people around for whatever reason, how that process will operate. And we're running into roadblocks on everything. The agency 6 years ago, negotiated a contract that had a lot of take-backs in it. We're trying to negotiate some better processes in these areas. I'll give you an example. For instance, the current agency award system has nothing to do with what you do on your performance appraisal. We find that kind of odd, that the agency has a right now to give awards pretty much based on who they feel like giving awards to. So we think there should be, you know, that people who get higher appraisal ratings ought to have a larger consideration for awards. In the merit promotion system, what currently exists is employees do an application, which is kind of a test, and based on their score, they get placed on a well-qualified list, which is the list that the selecting official will use to determine who gets a job. The system the agency is using doesn't take into account one's experience, how many years they've been working at the job. It doesn't take into account what their appraisal rating is. It doesn't take into account any awards they've received, and we find that to be unsound system, that it allows a lot of abuse. We found that we've had accumulated a lot of evidence that there has been a lot of abuse in the merit promotion system. Relatives of managers have been given promotions frequently. Friends and colleagues of managers have been advanced over what we think are deserving bargaining unit employees. So we're trying to cure those problems by, proposing procedures where you could get a better list of qualified candidates for promotion by limiting to some degree management's discretion to pick whoever they choose, because we found that that kind of discretion has led to abuses.
And what do you think it will take to get past these roadblocks and on to a contract that's fair for the employees?
Well, we would hope that the agency would approach the contract negotiations in a manner in which they would want to have a reasonable agreement that provides for, for a decent benefit package for employees, a decent right package for employees, and allows the union to function and the work site in its representational requirements. And we would hope that they would change their attitude regarding those issues. I mean, SSA employees have been working extremely hard to provide Social Security services and benefits to the American public. There's a lot of talk about how federal employees are overpaid and lazy, but, I don't see it. I think our employees work as hard as anyone. There's a lot of stress. We've been understaffed for years, and the work requirements are pretty severe. We have to be adaptable to change. Congress changes the statute in many ways every year on how Social Security benefits operate. Our employees have to be adaptable to that. And we've had to work under some extreme conditions. Lately, our offices have been subject, our employees have been subjected to more and more threats and assaults from the public, who are understandably frustrated about the economic condition in the country and attempting to secure benefits from Social Security so they can deal with that. But our employees are taking the brunt of a lot of that frustration, and it disappoints us when the agency, the people who run this agency, don't think enough about their employees, that they have hardline positions at the bargaining table and try to remove some of the rights and the benefits that the employees have earned through the years that they've worked in the agency. And if that doesn't happen, if they don't loosen up their attitudes, it looks like we're headed towards third-party resolution. We can't strike in the federal sector, and the only way to resolve contract impasses is through the Federal Services Impasses Panel, and that's an option that certainly is at our disposal. And if we don't get movement from the agency soon on many of these issues, we're headed towards, final bottom-line positions that, we may have to be forced to take to the Federal Services Impasses Panel for resolution.
Witold Skierczynski, president of AFGE's National Council of SSA Field Operations Locals. Witold, thank you for your time. You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll hear from AFGE Federal Protective Service Local 918 President David Wright with the story behind explosives found at a Detroit federal building.
Attention AFGE members, AFGE has formed an exclusive partnership with Grantham University to offer you and your family members a special discounted tuition rate. With Grantham University's 100% online degree programs, it's even easier to earn a college degree while working full-time and meeting the needs of your family. Military and government training may be eligible for transfer credit. Find out more at grantham.edu/AFGE. That's grantham.edu/AFGE.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. Call the AFGE Benefits line at 1-888-844-2343 today to see how much you could save. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and we've been joined by David Wright, president of AFGE's Federal Protective Service Local 918. There was a recent bombing attempt at the Detroit McNamara Federal Building. What happened, David?
From what I gather in speaking to sources and reading reports, a package was left at the plaza of the McNamara Federal Building in Detroit approximately February 26th. An FBI employee reported the package to an FPS contracted private security guard who retrieved the package, which that in itself violated all security protocols. He retrieved the package and took it inside the building and apparently made no determination that there was anything suspicious about it, anything wrong with it, and apparently the package sat around for 3 weeks until, I believe it was March 18th.
You indicated that all of those steps taken by the contract security guard were against protocol. What is the correct protocol in that situation?
Basically, protocol is, if it's an unattended package, then it is thereby a suspicious package. It should have been left in place. Authorities, in this case, the FPS, Explosive Detection Unit, FPS inspectors, and the appropriate city resources should have been called in to check out the package. As I said, that protocol should have been to leave that package in place, clear the area, and let the professionals do their job.
So after the contract security guard left the package inside the building, what happened next?
It apparently sat for several weeks. We do have information that it at various times had been picked up and looked at and observed, all to no avail. Apparently on March 18th, an FPS inspector noted the package and ran it through the x-ray machine and detected the explosive components inside.
And so what happens at that point? Does the package get taken apart, detonated? What's the outcome?
The officer at that point made the call that since he knew that it had been handled quite a bit over the preceding weeks, he made the call to pick it up and take it outside to a safer area away from people. I think he had the discretion to do that. Not sure that I would have done that. And they called Detroit Bomb Squad and FBI. Bomb Squad arrived, picked it up, using proper protocol this time, and took it to a remote area and detonated it with a water cannon.
Dave, this situation seems to highlight the real differences between federal protective service officers and contract security guards. Talk a little bit about those differences and how the situation in Detroit plays into this.
Right. Well, as you know, Jason, Local 918 has been in existence since April of 2006, and we've long advocated federalization of these private contract guards, federalization of these guard posts to federal employees. The problem with the private contracts are basically these individuals are undertrained in a lot of areas. They lack the authority, and in most areas, they lack the authority to make arrests or sometimes even detentions. The lack of training occurs, very little annual training involved, and they're just not, number one, they're not vested in a federal career. They work for a private company. Number two, a lot of them are just not in that security culture. It's just a job. It's not a career. And that leads to, in my opinion, that leads to apathy, which is not a good place to be in this day and age.
This has also led you to spearhead reform efforts at FPS, right?
Correct. We've been advocating reform of FPS for years now, and making a lot of headway throughout the years. And those things seem to have, the momentum seems to have stopped at this point.
You've also taken this fight to Capitol Hill, though, correct?
Yes, which resulted in a couple of bills last year that was aimed at reforming FPS. When we departed, when we left GSA in 2003 and came over to ICE, we were at almost 1,500 employees, including, I think, 1,100 federal law enforcement officers. In the interim, given a very immediate reaction by ICE, we were downsizing through attrition for years. In November of 2006 and February of 2007, announcements were made to downsize even further and basically eliminate the operational aspects of Federal Protective Service. Consequently, our numbers are, I think we're the only law enforcement agency in the federal government that once we came over into ICE, our actual full-time employment figures have dropped. And it's just ongoing. It's like an ongoing attack against my fellow officers.
This is AFGE's Inside Government. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and I'm speaking with Dave Wright, president of AFGE's Federal Protective Service Local 918. Dave, when you go to Capitol Hill and you talk to legislators about this issue, do you find that they're sympathetic to your needs?
In the years prior, from 2007 to 2010, the incentive was there, the momentum was there to get things fixed. It was just a getting the right picture and the right recommendations in place to get some bills pushed through. And I spent last week up at Capitol Hill, and suffice to say I'm pretty discouraged by what I heard.
And what was that you heard?
Despite approximately 8 or 10 congressional hearings, 8 GAO reports, 3 or 4 more GAO reports that are expected to come out and do not paint a good picture of where FPS is. Despite all that, I think the will is not there to reform FPS. I think we're in an anti-federal employee climate an anti-union climate, and everyone up on the Hill is wary of that, and I think we've lost momentum.
How then will you, as a leader at AFGE and the one really spearheading this charge for Federal Protective Service officers, how will you respond?
I will continue, despite what I see as a lack of momentum. The truth is the truth. These private security officers, while many of them are veterans and combat veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, this is not detracting from the guards themselves. It is the system. But as I said, I have no choice but to continue. It's not right. We are experiencing issues every day that lead me to fear for the safety of the public and the employees at federal properties.
Who in Congress has supported you on this? I know that there has been some support along the way, correct?
Right. It was really bipartisan support up until this year. Senator Lieberman and Senator Collins at the forefront on the Senate side, Benny Thompson, Eleanor Norton Holmes, Peter King on the House side, and every committee and subcommittee in between. It was generally bipartisan support to get this done. And it just seems that, you know, now looking back, it just seems that the thing to do was express outrage at every misstep of Federal Protective Service. Every GAO report, every hearing resulted in calls of outrage by both sides and promises to reform. And and it's not to detract from their efforts now. It's really just the overall climate, the overall anti-federal employee climate that's at Capitol Hill now. Either everyone abides in that climate or others are fearful of that climate.
Dave, if you can, give the listeners a sense of the differences in training that Federal Protective Service officers receive versus those who are contracted through a private company.
As a Federal Protective Service officer now, they go through 12 weeks of basic training at Federal Law Enforcement Training Center in Glencoe, Georgia. It is the premier federal law enforcement training facility. Beyond that, on-the-job training consisting of 12 weeks of riding with special agents and inspectors and physical security training through the 8 weeks of a physical security training program. The difference with contract guards is when they sign on and hire on with a company, they undergo approximately 80 hours, of which FPS only monitors a very basic, minimal course. And other than firearms training, other than firearms and first aid training, nothing else is repeated in subsequent years. So it kind of lends to that state of apathy, as I say. You're on the job every day. Nothing happens. Rarely anything happens. And it just leads to a lack of security awareness.
Dave Wright, president of AFGE's Federal Protective Service Local 918. Dave, as always, thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you, Jason.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next we'll talk with Grantham University President Dr. Frederick Snow.
The wrecking ball is hitting right now. Vital federal, state, and local services that working Americans depend upon every day are being smashed. As public employees, we know firsthand the damage these crushing attacks will have on so many Americans. Education cuts from Head Start through college loans. Less nursing care for veterans. Shutting down inspections for food, air, water, and coal mines. Closing Social Security offices. Less fire, police, prison, and border protection. And less support for our troops. Public employees need to set the record straight. No one is telling the real story, and no one knows it better than public employees. Call, then visit your congressmen and senators. Tell them who you are and what you do. Just tell them the truth. It's about time somebody did. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
Some polls say Americans don't trust government, but listen to our members, the real people who work hard for you every day.
I'm Mike Schnobrick, a correctional officer at the Supermax in Florence, Colorado. Trust me, the terrorists are locked down tight.
My name is Janet Winghart, a Social Security claims rep in Fort Lauderdale. Senior citizens can trust me to get them the right check at the right time.
I'm Michelle Reed, a registered nurse at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. Trust me, I care for our veterans like family.
My name is Everett Kelly. I work for the Anniston Army Depot, Anniston, Alabama. Trust me, our tanks are tough.
I'm John Gage, president of AFGE. You can trust us. We work for you. Brought to you by AFGE and online at afge.org.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and we're joined by Dr. Fred Snow, president of Grantham University. Grantham is celebrating its 60th anniversary. So give us an overview about that.
Sure. Well, Grantham is one of the oldest distance education institutions in the United States, and we've been continuously accredited on a national scale for over 50 years. We have typically reached out to people who need a second chance. We really believe in the power of an individual, no matter where their starting point, to become successful and make a difference. And our university is really comprised of those who fought for the American dream, protected the dream, and achieved that dream. So we've been at this a long time, a lot longer than most of the more prominent online universities out there.
You mentioned seeking out individuals who are looking for a second chance. Explain that a little bit.
Sure. Well, you know, for most of us, not even some of us, but for most of us, education came a little later in life, or the need for education came a little later in life. Or the first time around, maybe we weren't quite so serious or quite as prepared. And that happens to a majority of the population in our country. So this is actually the majority, not the minority, of people who have this need. And as they come back to school, they suffer from great nervousness and anxiety about wanting to do well. All of a sudden, there's something on the line for them, their family, their careers. They're seeking that economic stability. They're seeking career advancement and so forth. And they have a very different kind of need and a very different kind of learning style. And so we specialize in meeting those needs and those learning styles of those folks who are coming back to school.
How does Grantham go about easing that anxiety and that nervousness for someone who may be jumping back into student life?
Sure. Well, Grantham specializes in two areas in this regard. Number one, in the way that our courses are constructed and the way that a student progresses through them. And the second one is in the tremendous support system that is built around the student. Every student has an individual mentor. And that mentor helps them with life decisions, if need be, certainly with academic decisions, helps them if they're struggling in the classroom to find the appropriate level of attention that they need, proactively works with them when they're struggling in the classroom. And so it's, in many ways, we kind of swaddle our students. We stand all around them and help them and make sure that we're there when they need them, when they need us.
And talk a little bit about Grantham's commitment to diversity.
Sure. Well, Grantham has one of the highest diversity rates in the nation. We have 47% student diversity rate, and we're quite proud of that. That diversity rate also goes right into our place of employment. We have over 300 people in the Kansas City area, and our diversity rates are just as good there at our university.
Given the large number of continuing education courses and universities, whether in a specific location or online, what sets Grantham apart and why should a student choose Grantham to further his or her education?
Sure. Well, Grantham University has always been devoted to the student, not necessarily devoted to making a profit. And so and we're very good, we're very creative, we are penny wise, we invest our resources wisely. So we have one of the lowest tuition rates in the nation for an organization of our caliber. And you can come in here and get an associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree for far below what the average is out there in the online market, far below.
And what are the benefits of online education these days?
Sure. Well, online education allows for the best of both worlds. And when I say the best of both worlds, the world of being synchronous and being asynchronous, being together and not being together. It's difficult for people stationed all over the world or all over the country, working different hours and having different lifestyles, to all get together at one point in time. Anybody who lives in a metro area struggles to get to class. In the online environment, you don't have to worry about those things. Your classroom comes to you at the point where you need it. At the same time, because technology is so robust these days, we have quite an interconnected community within that classroom. So while not everybody may be able to get together at one point in time, and rarely does that ever happen, an individual can get together with their professor or with a fellow student or with a small group of students anytime that they wish through the technology. So it really is the best of both worlds. What we do find is that in online learning, the participation of each individual member of the classroom is far higher than in face-to-face. In face-to-face learning, we often have several students who take over the conversation, or we listen to the professor talk on and on. And that just doesn't happen in online learning.
You mentioned Grantham's low tuition rate. How has that impacted your admissions and application rates given the struggling economy that we're facing now in America?
Well, I'll tell you that there are many online institutions who have taken a hit this last year. There's been a lot of looks at online education from the Department of Education and so forth, and many of our competitors are struggling with enrollments. We, on the other hand, our enrollments are just fine. We continue to grow at a very nice pace, a very manageable pace. So we feel that that is because in this environment, people are turning away from some of the other more expensive options and looking at ours and finding the quality indeed is there.
This is AFGE's Inside Government. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and I'm speaking with Grantham University President Dr. Frederick Snow. Dr. Snow, Grantham has a unique partnership with AFGE. What kinds of benefits do you have available to AFGE members?
Sure. Well, we have, in addition to our low tuition, we have an additional tuition discount down to $250 per credit hour for AFGE members and their immediate families. We have a textbook and software grant. You don't have to pay for textbooks at our university. We have also an annual scholarship. It's a full scholarship valued at $36,000 for the recipient to earn an undergraduate or a graduate degree at Grantham University. And it covers cost of tuition, textbooks, software, related fees. It includes a laptop that is provided by AFGE and Purchasing Power. And so we really, really feel strongly about the mission of AFGE and its members and their desire to get ahead. And so this is how we contribute to that.
If AFGE members or their families want to apply for the scholarship, take us through that process with deadlines and how to access the information.
Sure. Well, applications are actually now being accepted for the scholarship, and that deadline is May 31st. And you need to complete an online application, and you would simply visit afge.org and go to the member benefits section.
You mentioned with the benefit discount that it would be $250 per credit hour. Where does that rank Grantham in terms of cost related to competitors or other online universities?
Well, it puts us right at the bottom, quite frankly.
So it's a very, very good deal for AFGE members, their families, people who want to get involved and further their education then.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about the online degrees that you have available through Grantham.
Okay, we offer actually 38 degree programs. We have three different schools, the Mark Skousen School of Business, a College of Arts and Sciences, and a College of Engineering and Computer Science. And in the business program or business school, we obviously have a variety of business programs that most people have, are aware of and have heard of. In the College of Arts and Sciences, we actually at this point in time are separating out our nursing and health into its own school, our nursing and health sciences program into its own school. And it's it's quite a wonderful program. It's headed by Dr. Susan Fairchild, a noted textbook author and educator in nursing. We're quite proud of that. The College of Engineering and Computer Science, we have computer science and electronics, engineering technology, computer engineering technology, information systems. We just have two new, brand new programs launched in February, a Bachelor of Business Administration in Human Resource Management and a Master of Science in Business Intelligence.
Describe those two degrees for a little bit and how they may fit into someone who would be looking for an opportunity in government or public service.
Oh, you bet. Well, human resource management has always been a big field in government. You know, the AFGE, it's in and of itself is hundreds of thousands of members, and the resource management of that, especially at the human resource management level within each and every one of those agencies, is very significant. So it's designed for students who are seeking a career in that field, and it covers topics like business management, business law, labor relations, employment law, training and development, personal management, etc. The MS in Business Intelligence is also just as significant today. We find that this is one of the hottest fields, and especially within union environments. And it's ideal for students seeking a career in management or those who are interested in becoming a business analyst. Now, the business analyst part of this in terms of business intelligence is very significant these days, and not only just in business analysts, but the skills also correlate very highly to government research and government analysis. So, you know, the curriculum integrates technological concepts within a relevant application framework, and we're pretty happy with this program.
Dr. Snow, have you found that a number of Grantham graduates have moved on to public or federal service, even here in the D.C. area?
Oh, indeed. In fact, I would say primarily so. We serve a lot of government employees. We serve a lot of Department of Defense, active military, or retired military folks. And, of course, they center their activities around government activities and jobs. And so we have tens of thousands of them littered out there across the landscape of government, and especially in Washington, D.C.
And finally, Dr. Snow, what upcoming programs do you have that may be coming in the pipeline for Grantham?
Well, we're looking at a very significant expansion in our programs, not just in pure programs, but certainly in certificates that build around those programs. We're also looking at working with AFGE to essentially collect each and every training hour that has been done for the union member throughout their union membership and bringing that to bear upon transfer credits. And so that's that program in and of itself should help any AFGE veteran to further their education much more inexpensively and much more quickly.
If listeners want to learn more about Grantham, how can they find you?
It's very easy, www.grantham.edu.
Dr. Fred Snow, president of Grantham University. Dr. Snow, as always, thank you for your time today. Thank you to our guest this week, AFGE SSA Council 220 President Witold Skierczynski, Federal Protective Service Local 918 President David Wright, and Grantham University President Dr. Fred Snow. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife.